when you look at it as a whole, it's really important to understand what is the priority and what are the constraints that I need to deal with my role as a scientist.
Hey, smart biotech scientists, how are you doing? Have you ever wondered if you could boost the productivity of your cell just by doing media design? Or if you could change the quality attributes by changing some parameters or some components of your cell culture media? Well, if you've asked these questions, you are at the right place. Because today, I'm going to have a conversation with Tom Fletcher, who is R&D Director in Process Development at Fujifilm Irvine Scientific. And he's going to tell us why rational media design is a game changer. And I must say, I'm a bit biased because I did a lot of rational media design in my career and I love it. It's great. And he's going to explain you why you should consider rational media design as well. And not only that, he's going to break it down in very simple steps so you can start using rational media design, even if you're working in a smaller company with less resources. So stay tuned. And coming up, Tom Fletcher, R&D Director at Fujifilm Irvine Scientific. Are you juggling the complexities of CMC development while trying to enjoy the beauty of biotech? Have you ever wondered if there's a way to simplify bioprocessing? Welcome to the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast, where we're diving headfirst into the very challenges you face. We're breaking it down, demystifying the jargon, and giving you the keys to unlock your full potential. I'm your host, David Brohman, and I get it. With 15 plus years in the biotech industry, I face the same challenges you do. There's a way to simplify and streamline so you can remove complexity, you can skip trials and errors, deliver without delay your groundbreaking therapy to clinics and market, and still enjoy every single step. Do you want to learn how industry experts and I did it? Grab a cup of coffee and your favorite notebook and pen. Now is the time to take your bioprocessing game to the next level. Let's smarten up biotech. Welcome, Tom, to the Smart Biotech Podcast. It's so great to have you on today.
All right. Thank you, David. It's my pleasure.
Share something interesting about yourself that most people don't know.
Yeah. So one thing that people who don't know me well might be surprised to hear is that I was involved in a surfing business. So probably no surprise that being in Southern California, I've enjoyed surfing in years past, but I had the opportunity to invest and actually be a co-founder of some surfing brands that are well known now. Back in those days, they were nothing. So one is called Billabong. So Billabong is a company that we brought to the United States. It was a small company in Australia at the time. And so I really enjoyed watching it grow, and it's now a global brand. We did the same thing with a brand, again, some people may know, named Hurley. So Bob Hurley was my business partner. So that's actually a little detail that was a fun part of my life back in those days. We grew those brands. I think together now they represent something like $1 billion in sales globally, right? So really something to watch and really enjoyed that very much.
Wow, that's amazing. And how did you get from surfing to biotech?
Good question, because I was already involved in biotech. I was actually working here at Irvine Scientific when I had that opportunity. Just kind of something going on the side. I mean, originally it was just an investment, but I did work there for a couple of years, but ended up back here at what we now call Fujifilm Irvine Scientific. So happy to be here. It's really what I studied for. So, you know, it was just kind of a little bit of a detour, I guess, in those days. Way back, I'm going way back, by the way. It was many years ago.
Fantastic. Now let's talk about bioprocess development. And this is the focus on our podcast. And from your extensive experience over many decades, what would you say that are the most common hurdles that biotech scientists encounter when dealing with bioprocess CMC development and manufacturing of biologics?
Yeah, so probably no surprise what I'll comment on that, because I would say the combination of complexity of the process, so many variables, so many challenges. But what makes it really difficult is the urgency that's typically associated with the process development. So there's never enough time, really, it seems, to do things the way that we wish we could. But I would even complicate that more with the factor that is the priorities are changing often. In other words, in early stages of a manufacturing process development, speed is everything. But as that process matures, say through clinical trials, et cetera, the priorities often change. And so there's kind of a progression from speed to performance when it's all about, you know, can't we get a higher level of productivity or can't we achieve some other goal in the process? And then it keeps on changing, honestly, when it gets to, say, phase three or later stages to focus on reliability, efficiency. And so for the scientist or engineer who's responsible, I think really understanding what the goals are is so important. They might be really good at speed, but if the business says what we need now is that you improve reliability or efficiency, say cost of goods or something like that, well, the person who's responsible has to be able to adjust their approach to whatever those needs are. So I think that's very challenging. Obviously, at big companies, you have different teams. You have an early stage development team and a late stage development team. So they can be quite focused and quite capable at that particular stage of the process. But when you look at it as a whole, it's really important to understand what is the priority and what are the constraints that I need to deal with my role as a scientist.
You heard it well. I'm a smart biotech scientist. It's understanding what are the goals, why are you doing it, how fast you need to get there, and should I say the key targets, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, very important. And I can see as somebody who's young or new, they may not realize, oh, now the needs have changed and I really need to focus on something different.
Now let's delve into a topic I love. Well, I have done quite some rational media development, so I love this topic. I looked forward to our conversation, Tom. Can you break down what this concept means for someone who has never heard about rational media development? And why is it considered a game changer in bioprocessing?
I think it's an important concept. And it's not just media design, but actually rational methods being applied. I'm kind of a champion of that approach. And there are people on the other side. So, I mean, it's kind of an interesting debate. But from my point of view, what's happened is we've got many advantages in these recent years, you know, through automation and high throughput methods and different tools that honestly, I guess to some extent, we can become lazy scientifically because you can screen a lot of candidates, you can choose the winner and say, here you go, this is the best I can do. But I think we really rob ourselves of a valuable opportunity if we're simply applying automation and maybe libraries of candidates, screening things, kind of a blind approach. Even though that may be good enough, it may be very cost effective. I think you really miss a chance to benefit in several ways besides just ending up with a good process, let's say, because if you will apply a rational approach, and by that I mean kind of a thoughtful approach, or you can think of it as hypothesis testing. In other words, you've thought about what the specific problem is. You've thought about how could I address that particular limiting factor or that aspect of my process. You've set yourself up to learn something. And I would say the knowledge that you gain by using this approach is much more valuable than just finding the winner, finding the best media or the best variable parameter in your process. And so I could actually list for you, I think there are five different areas that that knowledge could be applied in valuable ways. One, discovering specific cause and effect relationships in your process. That's quite valuable all by itself. But number two, you could also support that resulting cell culture process later on. Suppose there's a surprising event that happens, which is very, very common, by the way. You would have some understanding that you could apply in terms of what to do. Something happens, the cells grow differently than you expected. Well, you've got some knowledge that you can apply, and that's very important. And number three, you could improve that process later on when you have the opportunity. I mean, perhaps you have more time later on in the project. Well, you can take the things that you've learned, call it a knowledge base, if you will. you could take that knowledge base and apply it to improving the process even further beyond what you did in the beginning. And then number four, you could develop new processes that come your way in the future because now you've learned something. So you should be able to develop better processes, do it faster, and do it cheaper because now you've learned something that can be applied to those future processes. And number five, I guess, last but not least, you might even have some kind of valuable IP that could be treated either as a trade secret or perhaps a patent. And I think the company that you work for would probably see some value in that if there's an opportunity to take these lessons learned along the way and turn it into IP. I think that could be considered also very valuable. I'm a little bit biased, but if you put it side by side, you know, compare a random approach, it might be faster, but compare it to a rational approach, I would always come down, almost always anyhow, on the rational side because of that knowledge that can be gained. I think that's quite valuable.
Yeah, I love that you stress the fact that it's not necessarily about finding the winner, but it's about gaining process knowledge. And this is what I found in my career. This is the game changer in case, yeah, for instance, you have deviations later on in production. You can always go back and see why is that. So yeah, I love that you broke it down into 5 points.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that surprising event that happens in manufacturing, I mean, that's not rare. That happens in many cases. So I think it really builds confidence in the organization as a whole if you have experts who've paid attention during the process development.
Yeah, and if you do rational media development, do you start from scratch or could also someone who has, for instance, a off-the-shelf media, could that person also do rational media design?
Well, absolutely. I think it's more of an approach than anything else. So if you had a starting point that was kind of a jump start, if you will, as you seek to optimize or improve the performance of that medium, I think the things that are learned are still legitimate lessons and still contribute to the knowledge base. So yeah, I think starting from an existing medium, I think should be still doesn't change the approach that I recommend.
Awesome. Now, if we take this a step further, where do you see this going, this rational media design? Like what are emerging trends or now with AI, for instance, or some other fancy stuff? Or what could we possibly do in 5 or 10 years down the road?
Yeah, well, you brought up the magic AI term before I did, but I was planning actually to bring that up along the way because I agree. I think we're very excited about artificial intelligence. You know, we're exploring ways to apply it here at Fujifilm, but there are other ways too. It's not only AI. I think recently we've been pleased to see some in silico models, and so metabolic models, but also there's been some specifically designed to understand media chemistry. You know, the media chemistry itself has some complexity. You can have some cross reactions, some precipitation, instability, solubility issues, because the solubility of one component can affect the solubility of other components in combinations. And so there are a number of, I guess, computer-based tools that I think will complement the rational approach. I think it's learning how to combine the human reason, which represents what I call rational, with these artificial intelligence tools or these in silico tools. So they're not mutually exclusive. And again, I saw this in your dissertation. I guess you were combining some high throughput methods with a rational approach. I think that's going to continue to be where we gain the most benefit. So you don't want to be oversubscribed to one approach to the exclusion of some other approach. It's learning how to marry these things in practical and effective combination. So I find it very interesting that we use this term artificial intelligence because I don't know if people realize, but in the natural sciences, if you're collecting data and you get an artifact, that's synonymous with an error. Like an artifact is what you don't want. So again, I think it takes this combination of human reason with some of these powerful tools such as artificial intelligence. And it's a matter of combining hypotheses and also combining thoughtful interpretation of the results. And so you can't depend completely on ChatGPT or some artificial intelligence tool to find the answers for you because it's actually quite weak in the ability to reason through complex biochemistry. And then at the same time, our brain is limited in terms of what kind of throughput can we manage. And so by learning to work as a team with these artificial helpers, I guess, I don't know what to call them, but through these in silico methods, I think we can really learn to apply the strengths of both and get the best results. So yeah, we're on the same wavelength once again, David. No surprise, but when you bring up AI, that's a very relevant subject. We're exploring it. We don't want to oversubscribe to it because I think we'd miss out on the best of it. That's very appropriate. And then as I think you've also heard me mention, we've been exploring more practical issues like media preparation and scale up. So that's where we feel there are also some game-changing opportunities to improve on media development.
Great. I love AI. And I love also that you mentioned we still need thoughtful interpretation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What I hear, it's a good collaboration with the technology and also the scientist and the engineer that brings the right ideas to the table, right?
Yeah, that's right. We can't fire the scientists because we're going to always need them, I believe. Yeah.
That's good news for us.
Exactly. Maybe I'm biased. I don't know. But I think the scientists will always play a very important role.
Smart biotech scientists, I hope you've gotten as much value out of this discussion as I have. We are in the middle of this discussion on rational media development with Tom Fletcher, who's an R&D director of process development at Fujifilm Irvine Scientific. So stay tuned for part two that will drop on Thursday, where we're going to get very practical and look at how you can get started right now. He's going to break it down in very simple steps. So stay tuned and have an amazing week. All right, smart scientists. That's all for today on the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast. Thank you for tuning in and joining us on your journey to bioprocess mastery. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, we can empower more scientists like you. For additional bioprocessing tips, visit us at smartbiotechscientist.com. Stay tuned for more inspiring biotech insights in our next episode. Until then, let's continue to smarten up biotech.